The rain is nonstop, and the trail is not easy. We were warned that it may look like a stroll of 7 miles along a loch, but it's steep ups and downs, dodging bog and stream. By the time we arrive in Kinloch Hearn, we're wet through and through. The cafe's inside an old farmhouse and is clean and dry, and there's a man sitting inside. He opens the door a crack and tells us, "We're closed." That's when Ted steps forward, replying how he phoned and is disappointed with them. The man's wife appears to tell us her mother has died. Well, I fear that Ted might sound scolding, so I butt in and say, "We're so sorry, in that I've come from America. We've heard such lovely things about your cafe." The woman is furious with me and snaps that she didn't bank on her mother dying. Oh, dear. I had no idea I was being offensive. I apologize and step back into the drenching rain. And that's when Ted makes himself look old and suffering. At least that's what he told me later. And the man relents, inviting us inside, but not without leaving our rucksacks, shoes, and waterproofs in the storeroom, where we have to walk back outside in the rain uncovered and wearing borrowed Crocs before we can enter. By the time we sit down, cheese sandwiches await us. Hot coffee is steeping, plus 3 large slices of chocolate cake. We're warm and dry, well-fed and well-watered, too. But the stay is short-lived, and we're asked to leave. "I told you we were closed," he gruffly reminds us. "I was just getting warm, and out there it's raining. It's cold. And the only place to camp is on soggy, wet ground." You're listening to the Blissful Hiker Podcast. I'm Allison Young, the Blissful Hiker, sometime professional flutist, sometime voice artist, and full-time pedestrian. Thanks to Lecky Trekking Poles and Belega Socks for their support. Also Summit Orthopedics in the Twin Cities. My choice for 2 total hip replacements. I guess you could call me Bionic Bliss or the Titanium Tramper these days. My goal in sharing stories of walking long-distance trails as a solo, female, middle-aged, titanium-reinforced hiker is to empower you to learn to hike your own hike, too. Waking up that morning dry and warm and able to stand as I sort my kit is a luxury I'll never take for granted. That and being able to turn on a faucet for water. We awaken not on the ground, but in a lovely bothy with flush toilets and electricity. It's not heated, but it's out of the elements and it feels good. This is day 5 of the Cape Wrath Trail, and the weather is really turning. The mist is down, and I'm so glad we had such a great day yesterday. Sure, it rained, but there were clear spells with gorgeous light and full sun. Today, the high Munros and everything surrounding us are in cloud. We sit in chairs for breakfast, feeling like royalty, and are warned by a couple who walked our trail yesterday that not only is it really tough, but making matters worse, the end has no bothy, and the B&B is sold out. There is a cafe, usually called simply Calf, but it's shut more often than open. They did call, though, and were told it would be open today. So we bundle up in waterproofs and a good attitude as rain comes down already. It's easy at first on road past wetlands and seaweed-filled beach. You should be able to see the Isle of Skye on a clear day, but we're lucky to see the ridges close by. Soon we leave this road and head right up on the head. The trail is clear if rocky and wet, but I splash through most everything at this point, my double socks glistening with bits of sand and shiny grit. So far, the strategy of a polyester compression sock with running socks over it is working, keeping chafing at bay. We're now an unlikely trio, though we seem to move at about the same pace. The bump on my head has receded, likely because it was my metal cup that broke the fall, and I only suffered a glancing blow. But my hand is stiff and might have come down hard in the fall. We're told this section will take about 4 hours, and right away Ted wants to know the terrain. I tell him it's 3 big climbs and 5 small climbs. The trail is obvious, and the rain stops enough for us to see the shape of the loch and the mountains holding it in tightly. Houses appear along the way, some with a motorboat anchored nearby. It's lonely here, yet surprisingly lovely. Bracken ferns are everywhere, mostly brown now and curling at the edges. Ted walks ahead and is swallowed whole in one overachieving tunnel. Trees with red berries are the brightest bit aside from Ian's blue jacket. A pine with spreading branches out of Dr. Seuss creates an arch to walk through. It's not a day for rainbows, but the rain does abate when we hit the first of the climbs. It's only 100 feet or so up, and the trail is easygoing. But down is another story altogether, the path like a trench where rainwater logically collects. We all take care after yesterday's wipeout, some of the steps huge from rock to muddy bit and then grass under a few inches of water. At a wooden bridge, Ian slips as if on ice and nearly loses his balance. Someone has cared for this trail and built rock support so the trail won't erode into the lock. At one bay, a cormorant swims past, an eye warily trained on us before he dives under. What I think is the second rise, but actually is the third, takes us higher still with a view to cliffs and two birds, hawks, eagles, buzzards, I don't know, soaring high above. I plod through puddles, but nothing is as deep as yesterday. We cross several burns, raging now from the recent rains, but not dangerous. The sheer quantity of water is hard to imagine, in the lock, crashing off the cliffs and spitting on us from above. A couple comes the other way, happy to be out on a day walk, and he comments that it's mild today. Very, very wet, but I guess I see his point because it's not cold. The path hugs the shoreline, going up at an angle on rock. It's tough, all wet and wearing a pack, but we manage to shimmy up it, Ian giving Ted a hand with his trekking pole. I'm happy I was wrong that we don't climb another head, but rather enter a rhododendron tunnel, bright green and damp. But it's the final challenge before we're let out on a road. And I see buildings and charge ahead, hungry for real food and starting to feel soaked through. But our warm and filling stay is so short, and I'm only just beginning to warm up before we're shooed out to make room for the guests, a group of Oxford geologists. The man points to a faucet in the courtyard where we can fill up our water bottles, and we wander across the bridge to a grassy patch to camp. There's no such thing as trail angels in these parts. A pay box greets us in the one section not completely underwater, demanding 1 pound to camp here. I find a few patches without puddles, and we wait for a brief clearing to set. The poles to my tent are bent on one side, and it sags, but I soon fix it by shoving my trekking pole in place to keep the rainfly off the inner bug net. And that bug net's important because the mozzies cluster, so let's quickly inside, each of us with our own door and vestibule to store our packs and shoes. The floor is damp, but on my Therm-a-Rest it's dry. It's a huge space, big enough to stow all the wet gear. The rain comes in spurts, followed by short spells of clear sky. The river's loud, and a few gusts keep things cool. I imagine it'll be dry enough and warm enough in here, but is tomorrow's hike even possible? The road out of here is a single track, winding a slow 22 miles, and the trail ahead is a rough and messy 12 or so to another B&B with two tough river crossings in the middle. All that can be done now is to prepare for an early start and decide in the morning whether or not to continue. Good grief, that pun was totally unintended. You're listening to the Blissful Hiker podcast. In a series of personal essays coupled with found sound and my own flute playing, this podcast explores my journey of self-discovery as a middle-aged woman, sharing the sometimes unglamorous but vital truth about empowerment as badass people who don't need permission to blaze our own trails in this journey we call life. The sky clears overnight, and I'm so warm I sleep only in a tank top with half my bag unzipped. But promptly at 5, the rain returns, slashing from the side, the wind blowing and making a racket. Ahead is the highest V-lock yet, plus two rivers, with warnings that it could be extremely dangerous to cross in spate or flood. It's not simply a matter of following a trail, because there is no trail, just a boggy, rocky soup of maybe a herd route. I can see the closest hills, but this is full-on all-day soaking rain, truly having settled in. The tent is wet, our waterproofs and shoes are wet, our spirits are wet. Needless to say, I'm disappointed. Ian and Ted have made an executive decision and walked to the cafe to try and find a ride out of here. But it's 22 miles of curvy mountain road to the main route. Do we try and hitch in this awfulness? And will the unfriendly couple be willing to offer their phone? It's funny how you get drawn into wanting to move forward. I know we have the strength, but it will take 8 hours, and we'll see nothing but driving rain in our face. Perhaps the weather will improve in the coming days. I hear they had drought all summer with high fire danger. It stops raining for a few minutes, and I look out, gray and miserable, the wind pressing at the tent. Ian returns first and tells me they managed to catch a ride with three of the geologists who just happened to be headed our way. What luck! They've come from Oxford up here to study the fault lines. Usually their time is spent in Central Asia helping populations determine where it's safe to build. But today they're in what they describe as the literal middle of nowhere, winding along on a one-lane road filled with potholes and puddles, the cliffs squeezing out the last day's rain. I ask about the geology here, and I'm told it's mostly ancient sandstone and mudstone from inland seas squashed at high temperature into nice banded metamorphic rock, which accounts for the brilliant mica and bright white quartz. Igneous intrusion adds another property of hardness, making this place a climber's dream. But not today, as I'm left wondering how climbing shoes make purchase in constant damp. The driver takes the curves at a clip, and in the back I'm whipped about, feeling my stomach and my throat. The open window keeps me from hurling, but it makes it very cold on this nearly 2-hour drive. I continue talking to the geologist gal, who mentions that she got interested in geology when she took a course on Aran Island. The weather was so wonderful, she fell in love with digging around. But then she adds, those who had bad weather on their course chose lab work instead of field work. It's not long before we meet the main highway up Great Glen, busy with traffic. A young man in shorts, a t-shirt, spats, and backpack walks along the highway looking miserable. And we look pretty miserable too when we end up at our B&B. But we have warm showers and warm beds, even a little whiskey to lift our spirits. The rain, though, is relentless, but the morning opens with clearing skies. The next bothy is about 15 miles with a dangerous rocky ravine to navigate. So with sadness, we decide to catch a bus back to Fort William and fetch the car, perhaps finding a less drenched area to hike. In the meantime, though, we bag a peek. The conveniently placed Monroe Ben Nevis, the UK's highest mountain. I shouldn't be surprised that the trail is actually packed with hikers, many totally unprepared in tights, holding their water bottle in their bare, exposed hands. Being the highest and easily accessed, it's so popular the locals have paved the tourist trail with massive stones. It's 4,400 feet above the lock at sea level, so it's not easy. But after the wild roughness of bog trotting all week, we keep a steady pace from start to finish. Rain comes and goes, and we get views of Loch Linnhe and the start of the Cape Wrath Trail. When we reach the halfway point of the Lochan, the trail is more gravel, heading right into mist. I consider once or twice turning back, since it feels kind of silly to exert so much up into colder and harsher weather without any view. But we press on, wind blowing cold rain right into our faces. Dozens come down, looking mildly miserable, and I say hi to everyone. A tiny pug hops over the rocks ahead of one man. Two women in fur-lined hoods and down are drenched to the bone. We soon hit massive rock piles, cairns to mark the way and keep hikers from walking directly off the vertical gullies. Our feet pick through slushy snow, thankfully not too slippery. But for about 200 yards, it's steep going, and the cairns disappear in mist. Two men come down, and Ted asks how far.
"Just round this corner, mate," they tell him.
"Mind the cliff," we hear softly as they head into the mist behind us. Three massive mounds mark the danger zone, and I look down a yawning chasm. The wind blows wildly, gale force as we press up to a group of windbreaks. I go towards the door up rocky stairs into an emergency shelter, hoping to dress more warmly. But Ted suggests we head straight down so as not to lose the footprints. Up until now, the wind was at our back. Turning round, we're smacked with ice. My fingers, my toes, they're numb. But there's nothing to do now but watch my step on the steep bit, carefully placing each damp sneaker on a snow-covered rock and heading towards the cairn coming into view.
You're okay.
It begins to snow massive horizontal flakes. Moaning as I go seems to help, as does a few, "You're okay, Allison, you're okay."
"You're okay."
We're out of snow and on rock now, just rain and wind, the temperature noticeably warmer. Down and down, I think how easy it is to ascend and ignore just how long the descent will take. But soon the Lachen is in view, and we're below the cloud. It's essentially stairs all the way down, tiring on the quads, but never slippery. All along the way, the builders created escape chutes for the rushing waterfalls, and it's frankly a luxury. I finally, though, feel the cold in my bones as we drive back to town. It takes a hot shower and wrapping in my bag to warm up. I can't help but wonder how it would feel trying to warm up in a wet tent or a stone bothy. Was it a risk to come to Scotland in October? Well, sure it was. But locals tell me it's difficult to predict weather at any time. This past summer was in drought, and oftentimes fall can be glorious here. Truth is, I've walked 60 miles of the Cape Wrath Trail, a fourth of it, and had absolutely glorious experiences of bog trotting, bothy sharing, passing rain showers followed by rainbows and a fresh breeze, and a bit of making up the route as I went. I survived a wipeout, and I went on to bag the biggest Munro of all, and have come to know a new part of the world as a walker. I didn't succeed in the goal I set out to achieve, but as the British would say of this few weeks in the Highlands, it was all rather good. And maybe, just maybe, we can still make this hike work. You can subscribe to Blissful Hiker wherever you get your podcasts, and please leave a review on Apple to help the show get discovered. Blissful Hiker is on Patreon right now. Find a link at the show notes or at blissfulhiker.com. That's also where you can find other episodes, the blog, see pictures, and contact me, blissfulhiker.com. Next week, some creative planning sees us continuing the walk to one of the most remote bothies in all of the UK. Until then, my friends, kia kaha and happy trails.